This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
7:48, Friday, the 26th of August, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run. In the meantime, let's talk about the royal pardon, because after the federal court dismissed Dato' Sri Najib Razak's final appeal over his sentence and conviction in the SRC International case, mentions of royal pardons have been garnering attention as the former Prime Minister must file the petition within 14 days if he was to stay MP for Pekan. And if he were to be successful in his petition for a pardon, the possibility of imprisonment and fine could be reduced or suspended entirely.
In response to that, electoral reform group Bersih started an online petition pleading with the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong to reject any request for pardon involving Dato' Sri Najib Razak. Just so far, close to 100,000 people have signed it. On the other hand, we also saw a group of UMNO supporters submitting a memorandum to Istana Negara in seeking a royal pardon for the Pekan MP. So what does the process entail, and should there be a reform on Malaysia's pardon system?
For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Edmund Bond, lawyer of Emma Bond Advocates. Good morning, Edmund. Now, can you help us break down the pardon process in Malaysia for us? How does it work and who's involved?
The Yang Di-Pertuan Agong and the state rulers have discretion under the constitution to give a pardon to any prisoner for any offence. When you are a prisoner and have been convicted, you can file for pardons, and that's by way of petition to the prison. And the pardons board then deliberates on the application and hears the Attorney General, who provides a written opinion. Then the pardon board advises the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong or the state ruler to decide whether to pardon the prisoner or not. Broadly, there are two types of pardon. There is the conditional pardon, where a heavy sentence is substituted for a lower sentence. So, for example, if the prisoner is convicted with the death penalty, that may be substituted with life imprisonment or increased imprisonment and caning. And the second type of pardon is where we saw in Anwar Ibrahim's case, it is called a free pardon, where there's a full acquittal from the conviction and sentence, and it purges the person from the offence.
But I mean, just give me a 101, right? Why do we need a pardon system in the first place? Like, can we just understand the rationale for it? Is it more like for us a check and balance?
Oh, well, it's a prerogative of the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong. It's called a prerogative of mercy. It's a relic of the old British times. It's always been there. It's been reserved in the constitution as a power of the king, and I don't think anybody is challenging the fact that there should be the prerogative of mercy by the king. It's just the process that's followed that I think is very flawed, and a lot of countries also have this with improvements with greater transparency and accountability.
So Emma, let's talk about these flaws. What are they?
Well, there are a few. The first is really the pardons board doesn't sit frequently enough. We've seen in one state where a pardons application or pardons board was pending for almost 8 to 10 years. And because they don't sit enough, you don't have these frequent hearings of the petitions and people just languish in prison. But I think the second more important thing is that the prisoner does not have a right to be heard before the pardons board. So the pardons board sort of sits in a room privately. We do not know the criteria that they have adopted. The Attorney General provides a written opinion. We do not know what is it in the written opinion. The written opinion is not provided to the prisoner. There is no hearing for the prisoner. In fact, there's even no right to be told whether your petition is dismissed or not. So I think the pardons board process needs to be improved so that we know that what criteria has been given, has been used to either free a prisoner or reduce his sentence. And you have seen, I think, in many cases, Harun Idris, Mokhtar Hashim, Anwar Ibrahim, we do not know why they have been pardoned. Some people say, oh, they have been pardoned because they have served a long time in politics, given great service to the nation. But then what about the other normal type of prisoner who has not served public life, who's not provided that kind of service? So the criteria, I think, is quite blurred. We do not know why somebody is pardoned. And this is going to be the case if a high-profile prisoner is pardoned in the near future or not. And people will ask, you know, why was this done while you have many people still in prison waiting for their pardons to be heard? So in terms of transparency, I think that needs to be improved, that process, that we don't have a law that governs that process. And thirdly, I think it's a question of accountability. The courts have decided that pardons are non-justiciable, meaning you cannot question the ruler's decision to pardon somebody or not. So if somebody has not, we think somebody does not deserve to be pardoned, or we think somebody deserves to be pardoned, either way, you cannot challenge it in court. So a lot of cases, I think even currently, children who are languishing in prison, when they committed those offenses, they've grown old. You know, sometimes they get pardoned, sometimes they do not. And this is sometimes quite unfair because we do not know why, when, and how.
So in summary, frequency of the pardon board is not high, long and short enough. Secondly, that the prisoner has no right to be heard. Thirdly, we don't have transparency criteria to how they are pardoned. I think those are the three broad themes that you talk about here. Can you give us an accountability, though, for? So can you just understand me the criteria for pardoning? Because I think one point you were alluding to is that the current requirements are so vague, like years of service and such. And so then it's kind of the preserve of the powerful, essentially, right, when they are basically given the right to be pardoned. What are the criteria then for you are very important for the basis of pardoning?
Generally, we look at rehabilitation. We want to make sure that the prisoner is truly repentant, has rehabilitated, and we have seen much improvement and progress in terms of religious, moral improvement and development. And service to society. And of course, whether the person is still a danger to society, if the person was convicted of an offense when he was really young, he's now 70 years old, and the offense was a violent crime in a bar, for example, and now he's 70 years old, and you know he's not possibly not going to be able to commit that kind of offense again. You know, that's an example I'm saying. Mm. Just using it as a very general example.
But that points to the point about rehabilitation, about that service and danger to society, that pardons cannot be instant, right? They need to have some longer period when they're in prison before we can really see any sense of rehabilitation or that they're no longer a danger to society, isn't it? You cannot do an immediate pardon, isn't it? That's really limited basis if that's the criteria then.
Yes, of course. I think, again, the criteria is still vague. I cannot tell you for sure what criteria the pardons board uses. I'm sure there's some criteria, but we do not know what's the criteria. Some people say you need to serve at least 3 years for a white collar crime before you can be released or before you can have your sentence reduced. So I'm still not sure why. And that's why we need to be very careful in what we say, because the pardons board may have actually 100 criteria that is really pertinent, but we do not know what that criteria is.
Edmund, can you give us a sense of how many people have applied for pardons and how many people are successful? I mean, because I learned that there's pardons at the federal level and there's also pardons at the state level.
Unfortunately, again, I cannot tell you because that information is not made public. And this is, again, another flaw. We do not know. All I can tell you is that because Malaysia since 2018 or a bit before that has a moratorium on the death penalty, we have something like more than 2,000 prisoners on death row, and some of them are my clients, who are waiting for their pardons petition to be heard. But because, and this is a good step that the government has taken, because there's a moratorium, then of course the 2,000 over prisoners' pardons petitions will not be heard because the death penalty cannot be executed. You can't execute somebody, one, if your pardons has not been disposed of, or two, there is a moratorium on the death penalty. So I can tell you that figure for death row, more than 2,000, But for the rest of the prisoners, I cannot tell you because we do not know.
Okay. Edmund, one more question for me, and that is, who sits on these pardon boards?
The pardons board is constituted by the Attorney General of Malaysia. There's the Chief Minister of the state, or the relevant leader of the FT. There are three other members appointed by the Yang Dipertuan Agong. And the pardons board must meet in the presence of the Yang Dipertuan Agong, who presides over it. The Attorney General provides that opinion, and the written opinion I mentioned, and the pardons board then deliberates and advises the Yang Dipertuan Agong. But the Yang Dipertuan Agong has a full and absolute subjective discretion whether to pardon or not.
Right.
He is not bound by the advice of the pardons board.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Edmund Bond, lawyer for Emma Bond Advocates, helping us understand the pardon process. And actually, we got a question asking why are we talking about pardons for Najib? And it's not so much about Najib, but just understanding what is the system and process like. And also, it's been interesting to find out that, you know, it's a rather opaque process. And there are many, many people waiting to be pardoned at the federal level and also at the state level. And in some states, the pardon board hasn't set for, what, 8 years,
yes.
10 years? You know, and in the meantime, what happens to these people?
I mean, there's no discounting. It's a very important function, right? And it's about how you uphold it, how you make sure it's transparent. I think we have got so many feedback from our listeners about the importance of it, how it's a crucial check and balance, you know. And I think they gave the good example of someone that committed a crime 70s, 80s years old, years 70s, 80s, you know, and then there's the rehabilitation taking place.
Yeah, which is an example that Edmund used. You could have done a crime when you were 18 and now you're in your 70s. And you have actually really, you know, rehabilitated. You have accepted that what you did was a crime, and you might still be languishing in jail.
So the power of redemption is very important, but what is that basis is very key.
Very true. But up next, we actually have the Breakfast Grill, where Keith Kamp speaks to the Executive Director of Classic Scenic. Up next, of course, the 8 a.m. News Bulletin. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.